Hey everybody, it's Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy here, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, The Rise of the Microbrands. Lunch with Norm. Well, Kelsey cut that off pretty quick. I don't know what happened there, but he did tell me, though, his internet was going to go off and on today because there's some construction going on downstairs.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry about that.
So is that why you screwed up?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, all right. I was just wondering, you know.
It's hump day.
Yeah. Okay, you're going to let me do my thing now?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So today we have a real treat. Yosef, a.k.a. Joe Martin, CEO of BoxyCharm, is going to be with us. And we're going to be talking about a unique vision as a CEO of BoxyCharm and what he did. How did he disrupt the industry? And just the overall brand. We're going to talk about how he used influencers to boost up the brand and get it known. So, Kelsey, anyways, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. And if you're new to the show, please head over to our Facebook group. You can find it at Lunch with Norm, Amazon, FBA, and E-Commerce Collective. If you are messaging on Norm's personal Facebook page, we cannot use your comments on the screen. But if you head over to the group, we can use them just like this. Hello, Marina. Welcome to the show. And if you're looking for any of the highlights, if you want to check out the full episodes, you can go over to our YouTube channel, Norman Farrar, and that's where all of the content will go. And I also want to mention we have a special episode tomorrow as well. That's right. We got four episodes this week, so make sure you come in same time as usual, 12 o'clock p.m., and it's going to have a special guest, Tim Jordan, and a panel, actually, of six people, of six different sellers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's going
to
be fun.
Why don't you tell me about these things when this is supposed to happen? But anyways, okay, so let's get into it. I just wanted to say a quick shout out to Faye, Marina, Yarrow, Andrew in China. Oh, my gosh. You're all over the world, Andrew. I wonder if you got any tchotchkes or anything that you can... No, forget it. No, I'm not going to ask. Anyways, Simon, Rod, Mark, Miro... Hi, everybody. And again, if you have any questions during the show, throw them over to the right-hand side and we'll get to them. And now just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome, Joe.
How are you? Thank you for having me.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I actually got to hear you last Friday. Was it last Friday? On Serial Entrepreneurs in Clubhouse. You were with Colin Campbell and his group over there talking about your success.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely made a difference. I'm so glad I joined Clubhouse. I recommend everyone that wants to try something different, jump on Clubhouse, amazing group. And Colin Campbell, absolutely love his rooms. Whenever I see it, I try to jump on it. So great.
Yeah. I wanted to, just in case people don't know you, a lot of people know a lot of the guests that come on because they're Amazon sellers, but can you just give us a little bit of background about who you are?
Sure. So my name is Joe Martin. Legal name is actually Yosef, but you can call me Joe or Yosef. I opened a company called BoxyCharm, which is a monthly beauty subscription box. The concept started in 2013, but fully launched it in 2014. The concept is full-size beauty items between skincare and color cosmetics and some tools. The idea is that it's $20 to $25 a month. And the retail value is always over $100 and plus if you walk into Sephora, Ulta, or department stores. And the idea was to pay the cost of goods to brands and place their products in box and send it to highly engaged consumers. The consumers pay a fraction of the original price, get to try products, so make them a better educated consumer. It's like a surprise every month in a month, pretty much. The concept was driven on marketing side for years, only on influencers marketing. We took off and we reached about 100 million in sales solely on influencers marketing. And then we obviously introduced some other forms of marketing, like performance and so on, but that was... growing up until last year, which we grossed a little bit over 400 million in sales. And by that time, our competitor bought a piece of it and merged the rest, which was Ipsy. And combined, we have built a beautiful company called Beautiful Industries that has over 4 million active members that are buying our products. And we're the largest beauty subscription boxes globally, or any subscription boxes globally. We're only in the United States and Canada currently, but it's a very exciting time for us. It is a day one. So yeah, that's in a nutshell what I do.
Very good. Yeah, so I read a bit about your biography way before this. Like, Colin was actually talking to me, oh, you got to meet my buddy, and talking about how successful and the way that you disrupted the industry as a whole. First of all, one of the things, we talk a lot about brand here, and being able to, Kelsey, is it my mic? Is something, I'm getting some feedback in my mic. Just sorry to...
Yeah, I think, Joe, do you have a pair of earphones?
I do not have it on me, but if you want, I can mute while you speak, so that would be easier.
Okay, yeah, let's try that. I'm not even sure if it's that. It sounds like it's, oh, there we go. It's perfect. All right. Joe came up with the answers. All right. So let's go back to the brand. What or how did you come up with this idea to build your brand?
So I had a different company before. I came to the U.S. Let me give you a little background. I came to the U.S. right after the military service in Israel. And went straight to school. I was an international student. And I was trying to find a way to actually make some money. And I had a couple $100 and I launched my first company called Merchandise Liquidators. Without going into details, it was a wholesale liquidation company. And the whole concept was literally driven by search engine optimization. And I learned the whole concept and I did well. As I grew the business, I found that that color cosmetics is literally the best, most profitable segment or category within that. The reason was most of my competitors were male and they went to their comfort zone, which is electronics and so on, perfumes, but no one was touching color cosmetics as much. So there was just much more supply than demand on our side. So when I would buy that, I would buy makeup for pennies on the dollars and I would sell it with great profit, but it was great. So I grew that business and mostly because of makeup. And eventually anyone that wanted good deals on makeup would come to me. Anything, you would type anything related to makeup, you would find one of my websites. I own plenty of domains, wholesalecosmetics.com. And so anything, all roads led to Joe by the end of the day. So around 2012, a different subscription box purchased from us some products. And I had a staff meeting every Friday, and I would go over some odd sales, kind of like to learn about this. And I saw that odd sale of some products, and I asked about the buyer, and they told me it's a subscription box. They told me what it is, and my first question was, how do they market themselves? And they told me the concept. The concept was they get free stuff every month. If they can't get free stuff, they'll come to us. So that's their deal. So I said, well, it's kind of crazy. I mean, if that concept is really good, you can't really scale the business if you ask for free anything. You can only scale so much by being gifted items. But then tell me, so I asked them, how do they market themselves? And they said, it's all social media. That's where I said, okay, that's good. That I can do. I know that part. And then when I learned that the concept was a brand would give for free sample size product for a box, with the hope that that's going to go to highly engaged consumers that will come back, I figure I can totally disrupt it. If I go in with a box where I can have the economics to pay the cost of goods, the manufacturing cost, no, I will disrupt that particular space right away. Why would anybody give away anything for free when I can come in and tell them I'll pay for that? And so instead of charging $10, I charged $21 at the time. And the idea was to buy 5 items to pay the manufacturing cost, but do it full size, not sample size. And then that's how the whole disruption started within that space. But indirectly, obviously, it affected the beauty space as well, because prior to that, people had to try everything that that they were able to try. And they weren't able to try a full eyeshadow palette or so on. Now they can go in and build a whole makeup collection for pennies on a dollar, literally. So they'll have boxes and boxes of products, and they would post it on social media for the makeup lovers, the makeup enthusiasts. They would show how many items they have, and it really disrupted the industry. So that's literally how we started the business, and that's how we continued.
When you started, did you do it all yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I started by myself. I mean, obviously, I hired people. Joe cannot respond customer service, but if you refer to partners, I didn't. I was self-funding the business. My other business was actually pretty good. It was pretty big, so I had warehouses. I had everything. So I put the first initial investment, which was $500,000, and it was paid off within the first 12 months or so. Paid itself off. It turned profit right away. Eventually, I brought in partners. I didn't need the partners, but it was secondary, so I didn't need the cash on the balance sheet. I was able to cash a little bit and de-risk a little bit and move on. Great partners, Carl Priley, and I would tell you that anyone that want to work with them, you know, I had great experience working with them, and they helped me be a better CEO.
Very good. I went to actually, Jeff Sass. I don't know if you know Jeff, but Jeff and I were in New Orleans speaking at SUBTA. And I had no idea about subscription box or the amount of subscription boxes there were. I think they were talking about 7,000 different boxes at the time when we were talking. I don't know how many there are now. How do you differentiate yourself between 7,000? I thought there might have been 100. I don't know. You know, I'm an old guy, but 7,000 boxes. How do you change? Like, how do you differentiate?
Well, the thing is, I wasn't truly thinking about a differentiation. Look, you have plenty of categories. So yeah, many of them would go into beauty and so on. But for me, it was very simple. Get the best product in the box. Get the right customer experience. Make sure that the members get the box in time and everything else with the best products out there. Give the brand the best marketing campaign for free. And then the last, but definitely not least, are the influencers. Give them a high roller experience in the casino kind of like thing, right? Make sure that they would be obsessed with BoxyCharm. Don't just do it for the transactional piece. And if you do those, it would be very easy for you to move forward and grow. And eventually, once you scale yourself more and more, when you go with us, it was literally about the brands that are coming into our box and the product curation and how can we build a better algorithm to personalize, truly personalize the product, right? But once you have, say, hundreds of thousands of units that you're asking a brand to produce for you, they say, well, why would I work with small quantities with plenty of little boxes and do each project and invest the same amount of time when I can just work with BoxyCharm and do 500,000 or 1,000,000 units at once? And that's it. So the gap that was created was in terms of the brand with the reputation, the ability to also procure products at a much lower cost because of quantity was there. So we were able to, for the same cost, produce a much better box with a much better value because we had the volume, we had the critical mass that we would produce. And eventually you don't have to worry about the entire market. You just have to focus on producing the best product. And we had our formula and it kept kind of like enriching itself. And that's why it worked.
So you had to differentiate yourself against a BoxyCharm versus Birch Bark. I think that's the name of the company. You know, how did you change it? Like, what was the difference? What was the difference between you two? You're both leading providers in the industry.
Well, Birchbox, obviously, they're the first movers, but they were not the leading going 2015 on. It was no longer the major box. I mean, Ipsy was the major one after that. And Ipsy was doing an amazing job, by the way. Mm-hmm. And those are my new partners. So I'm going to tell you, I'm not biased what I'm about to tell you. This is the truth. But they are amazing, and I think they had an amazing team. And the reason I liked the competition was because it gets you out of your comfort zone and it makes you think very creatively. And that's why I was able to scale my business. I needed that competition. Now, I understand the difference, okay? One started about 2 years prior to BoxyCharm, which is Ipsy, and then Birchbox was and Ipsy were distinguished with BoxyCharm because of the size of the products, right? They both had sample size. We were the ones with full size. So our proposition was different. The other piece behind all this is the way we work with products was a bit different. Where we would say, well, we have an eyeshadow palette. How can we trend that palette? We would have an organized formula to trend our products prior to placing them in our box. So people would be educated about those products prior. And they would come for the box because of the item. And it was systematic already. And by the end of the day, you don't really have to worry too much about distinguishing yourself, even if they were going into full size, which Ipsy later on did. It's because every box has different items. Everyone has personalization. And the best part behind all this, it's not a winner takes all type of space. We have many members that have multiple subscriptions. So if your products are good, they're going to stick. If you can keep segmentizing the product for those members properly, where the question is, it's who, what, and when. Who wants what, and when do they need it? This is a very important part, right? And based on that, you build an algorithm. So an eyeshadow palette can be great, but do they always need that particular type? Is it fall, winter type? Is it summer? When did they receive it last? Is it the right consumer to receive an eyeshadow palette every month or every other month? All that had to be built with a very sophisticated algorithm that we build that keeps enriching itself. And I think we've done one of the, perhaps an amazing job, one of the best out there, because the retention speaks for itself. Otherwise, you would never grow to be over a million members in a full size space where they have to pay $25 or more, in some cases about $35 bucks or $50 bucks. So that's how you can tell where your segmentation based on the who, what, and when works.
That's crazy. A million subscribers.
Yeah, but BoxyCharm, Ipsy had 3 million. So it's completely different because one has sample size and had a phenomenal job to actually introduce sample size that would be almost in a full size format. And they converted the industry into a place where people get to try everything before they want to buy. And that was again, they had their algorithm, we had ours. And I think combined, it was a beautiful thing.
On the podcast, we bring on people who specialize in influencer marketing. A lot of the times we hear that people are looking at the nano or micro influencers. You went right to the top. I don't know if you started out with nano or micro influencers, but at the end of the day, you went celeb, 500 million plus or 5 million followers plus. So you worked with the Kardashians, right?
Yeah, I do. I didn't start with the Kardashians. I came to the Kardashians when I was able to work with the Kardashians. And the thing is, look, today working with influencers, it's turning into a commodity in terms of people who wants to work with them. At the time when we started, it wasn't a thing. People didn't understand that. So you were able to see few brands that are popping and they're doing amazing, and influencers were lifting the brand. Right? Influencer doesn't just move revenue for you, it's also it gives you the cool factor, it makes you famous. So if you understand that an influencer would legitimize your brand as a cool factor, and they're literally a TV channel of their own, don't think of Instagram, think of their channel, and you say, well, I don't care what is your demographic, but if they are beauty buyers, I want them, right? So we went everywhere. I think you have to understand, we work with thousands of influencers. Yes, we do have some celebrities that we work with, but we also work with nano. We go all the way through, and we already created the long tail process where you start off with the mega ones, and then it follows through with everyone else. The idea is that the mega ones trend and create a trend. They help create awareness in a very massive scale, and they build upper funnel. Then when you go into the medium-sized influencers that already have a lot of input of advertisers, they'll say, well, I'll talk about Boxy because they're cool. It would make me look cool. It would make me look relatable. And I just saw the other people that are much larger talking about them. So it's definitely a thing, and I need to talk about them to even stay relevant. And then from there on, it keeps trickling down all the way to our own members that would eventually post their pictures and then we'll repost them as well. So it was a whole strategy to make sure that by the end of the day, everybody would want to talk about your product, and it worked.
You've built your entire business on influencers, right? That was your main marketing.
It was one of the first stepping stones, and we stayed true to it. We would not stop doing so. It's definitely something. I mean, we build a lot of relationship, great people out there, and as we scale, so does many of the influencers, and it was great to see how many of them became bigger than life in some cases, and but they didn't forget where they came from. So we have good friendships between us, and I'm very fortunate to say that I was able to enter early enough where people will actually answer your email, because it wasn't a thing for everybody to. And we knew that it would be just a matter of time until the input is going to be so excessive that it's going to have to go through management and so on. So we said, let's enter this community now, because anyone else that's going to come through later on, that's going to blow up, that we don't have a relationship with, we will have a relationship because we go to the same barbecues and we do go through the same events and we see each other and we're all friends by the end of the day. So you're always going to have the in. And I'm fortunate to say that many of them are good friends of mine forever for life.
Right. And there's a lot of times when you're building these influencers, you have to make sure that they line up with your brand as well. Like you can have somebody who's a gunslinger. You know, it's all about, you know, NRA, but you've got a very liberal type of view or product, and they just don't match. And I'm just using that as an example. Is there any advice that you can give? So Amazon and e-com sellers, there are there's new communities being built on Amazon called Amazon Post, Amazon Live. Are there any bits of advice that you could give to a new seller to get an influencer? How do you reach out to them? How do you grab, not the Kardashians, but the smaller influencers to make them brand ambassadors?
Just contact them. That's it. I mean, just go ahead and contact them. Contact everybody. How do you go and you meet someone on a personal level? You talk to them, right? You reach out, you send an email. And now, if you enter into a point where they said, okay, speak to my manager, talk to the manager. If they said, hi, how are you? The smaller size influencers would be more approachable, because they don't get enough, they don't get as many emails per day, but you know what, that's a start. But always reach for the stars. Ask yourself, if I try now reaching, working with a particular influencer, if I try now, in a year from now, where am I going to be if I do? Right. Mm-hmm. Where am I going to be in a year if I don't try? Right. And the only barrier is yourself. To stop yourself, go ahead and try and figure out and pivot from there. Edit your approach. It really comes down to what is your business offering them. I'll tell you one thing. If you sell, say, I don't know, let's just say, well, fitness products, right? You probably want to go to influencers first that actually talk about fitness. Right? Maybe an influencer that has that's in a different category and does hair, most, it's not going to be your person, right? She's never been to a gym on her stories. It's going to look off formula. So go for the ones that are more relatable, but then reach out, kind of like scan it. And if you want to know the way I was always doing this, I would look at the winners in your space. I would see the way they do it. If they haven't used influencers, good for you. You're going to be the first. If they have done the influencer strategy and they've done this well, go to the ones they already reached out to, because they already know the concept and it's easier. And then reach out for other ones and always think, how can I do it better than them? You can learn about collabs, how they're doing it in your space and so on, and figure out ways that you don't have to spend cash necessarily. You can collab with them with a percentage of sales over a particular product. And if you pick the right one and you know how to pick the right one, because there is also a way to go and pick the right one. Right? You want to pick the one that is trending right now, that have lots of friends, that they come with an army of influencers to trend on products. So you do revenue split on that particular SKU and you make your brand more relatable, but you don't have to worry about spending tens of thousands of dollars for one post that doesn't materialize. So that's my 2 cents.
So we, when we're talking about nano influencers, they're generally... They cost nothing. You know, they're $0 to $100. What you said was pretty interesting. So collaborating with the influencer and doing a rev split, is that correct?
Yeah. So in the beauty industry, there were quite a few events where brands will go and collab with an influencer over, let's just say, a particular lipstick. And the influencer would get a revenue share. I mean, every deal is different. I don't want to say that that's how it used to be, but it could perhaps be a revenue share or so on. And the influencer's job is to make sure they sell as many as they can from that lipstick, right? So it was a very successful thing. I mean, I have seen less of those recently, but it is a thing. It works. And the reason it works is because you say, well, if I'm a mid-sized brand, say 10 million plus, I can afford buying X amount of units that would satisfy a nice demand in which the influencers can get a percentage of the sales and make nice profit behind this. And that's going to be their name on it and their everything. But they also come up with their friends. All their friends are going to support them and so on. But ultimately for you, you only pay for that particular item. You're not giving them a piece of your business. So that item brings lots of people to your site. Now you just collected lots of credit cards. And now you collected all their emails and their names. And you say, okay, on my next event, there might be only my brand. I can go and send them emails. I can introduce them. Now they follow my brand. Now, so you get the brand popularity. The influencer get their money. They're happy about that for any piece that they will sell forever, for life, on that SKU. But you do have an upside for that, a side of that, where you can ultimately build a whole list of emails, and it works. Those members, you know who they are already. They like products in that type and so on. So you can segmentize those members and build them products for them.
I can guarantee you that everybody that's selling on Amazon right now, their ears just perked up, because when you get to own the client or the customer, which Amazon does not allow you to do, yeah, and as that's just a bonus.
I mean, it's definitely something that I always ask myself. Amazon is a different animal, right? So the members I would work with, the partners, the brands I would work with, will always have their site, and it was all around, I guess, the Shopify experience or whatever. So that was in our case, and they would be happy when they would go and have a collab, no matter what. It would translate well.
Great. So at this point, we had a bit of an issue right at the beginning of the show. Kelsey had some Wi-Fi things. We never got a chance to talk about this. So usually we have a giveaway during the episode. I am going to pay for the giveaway because I never had a chance to talk to you before this. But would you be open if I purchased one of your BoxyCharm products and sent it off to one of our listeners in Canada or the U.S.?
No, that would be on me. Don't worry about that.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, because I never talked to you about it. You know, like, we literally started at 12 o'clock. Yeah. Okay, so guys, if you want to experience BoxyCharm, and just check it out. I think we'll do hashtag BoxyCharm. Tag two people. And let's get this thing rolling. Kelsey, also, if there's any questions, are there any questions for Joe?
So we just lost Joe. He's back.
All right, good.
I got kicked out.
Was it something I said?
No. I was insulted. No, I pressed something by mistake and the whole thing went off.
Okay, very good. So Kelsey, are there any questions that are coming up?
Yes. So first off, for the BoxyCharm, I'm guessing U.S. and Canada. That's
U.S. and Canada. I'll send you a box, and then you can send it anywhere. So if we actually ship to Canada, but yeah, you let me know.
Oh, great. Oh, and Alan's back, by the way, around 2 o'clock in the morning right now. But he's also saying that he'll sponsor a prize for us today. So we'll have two winners, one for BoxyCharm and one from Alan. So that's fantastic. Anyways, hashtag BoxyCharm. And if you can tag two people, that would be fantastic.
If it's the BoxyCharm hashtag, it's going to be hard unless it's over here. On Instagram, you'll have a million people.
Oh, no, it's just here. It's just here. Yeah.
Yeah, just our audience here.
Yeah. Okay.
So we do have a couple questions.
Yep.
Coming in. So first off, any tips on how to build a great relationship with influencers So I think you talked about how you reached out at the beginning, but is there any way to actually foster that relationship?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, if you have thousands of influencers you deal with, I can promise you, you won't be able to build relationship with every single one of them. But you do need to build relationship with some of them. I can just tell you how BoxyChem did this, right? There's the company side where we throw lots of parties, a lot of parties, entertainment. I don't know if you heard about the virus. We can't do it anymore, right? But there is a virus going on. But we're waiting for that to finish. But all those years, that's what we've done. We even did influencers trip where we went with them to Mexico. We actually had Coachella, the last Coachella. It was amazing. So that's one thing. But from that, I was there in all those trips, and we just stayed friends. I would go and to LA and just meet with them. Those are my friends now. When I go to LA, many of them are sitting in LA. So and so will grab dinners, and we just go to each other's homes and so on. So, you know, by the end of the day, for me, it was as simple as just speaking to a person and talking in a natural way, as if I would talk to anybody. And if they work with you, and that's great. If they don't, that's great. We're still going to be friends if you guys want to go and grab some drinks. So I wasn't thinking transactional in it, to put it out there. Okay. It was more like, look, let's go out, grab drinks. If you want to work together, cool. If not, no problem. We're still friends. And eventually you build relationship like that. That's how it was. Just don't go and do it through an agency. If you want to build relationship with them, do not go and just expect an email to be enough. When you're in their hometown, just give them a call and say, you want to grab a drink? That's it. They're worth your time. They're people, they're cool. I mean, that's what social anything means. So pretty much as easy, it's not a rocket science. It's as easy as just go and pick up the phone if you can once a while and talk to them, find out what's their birthday, you know, send them something. That would mean a lot because it's thoughtful. So
you're really building a relationship,
yeah.
You know, taking them to Mexico. And I know I have a business partner in the chat agency, and he has swim diapers. So it's a seasonal product, and it's a tougher product. But he's got a relationship with these influencers that he's built and brand ambassadors. And over 3 months, they gave him 2,000 photographs. One weekend, he said, hey, I need you guys to highlight in a video so I can put it on Amazon Live, these things. He got 30, like just within a few days. But, you know, it's not just, it's exactly like you said. So he's doing it right. Okay, Paul, you know, kudos. You're doing it right. He took, before the virus, a group of the top influencers out, took them out to lunch, brought them in for the day, and just spent it with them because they were doing so much for his brand. Like, I can estimate that one photo for him, we're not talking about content, like written content, but one photo probably worth anywhere from $10 to $100 on a micro to nano base. You just take a look at that group that he got for 2,000 photos in 3 months. That's a ton of marketing for really nothing.
Well, the thing that I always thought about was that, you know, if you actually click with the influencers and we all click together, about that, put all this aside, the revenue part, what you get is this, like, you deal with people that all they want to do is stay relevant and go viral. And you sit down and you just talk to them about growth hacking tactics, and you'll get smarter, they'll get smarter. I mean, I'll tell you that some of the best tips and tricks I had was from influencers. We'll sit down and say, well, we found out that if you have an image and you post a story at the same time, one of them get deprioritized by the algorithm. So you kind of have to do, and they tell you the whole story, how to do it, and then how to do the hashtags right. Well, you first do the general hashtags, then you do the not very general hashtags, then you do very specific hashtags, and it builds it up, it builds relevancy and so on. It's like you find out all those stuff. Then you'll speak to another influencer and you can tell them, well, I see a mistake you're doing here. I heard over there that that's how it needs to be done. So why won't you try this one and see what happens? When they do see the results, they freaking love it. So eventually you're building a powerhouse of friends, and all you do is talking about ideas, and you all get smarter by the end of the day. And you don't even think about the fact that, okay, they'll talk about me because we're friends now, but they actually are friends, and we are all growing together, and we'll call each other, I just found out a new trick, check it out. You have a whole army of people that all they do is find those tricks, and you just put them all together. And that's how I would, and that's why I would say, think about it bigger than the little revenue part. It's much more than that.
Right, right. So I got to tell you too, as you were talking, my wife came in and grabbed me a cup of coffee like she usually does at 12:30. But she also gave me, look at this, everybody, a little mug with chocolates.
Nice.
Isn't she great? She's my best influencer, by the way. My brand ambassador. All right, Kels, what's the next one?
Okay, let's see. From Bronwyn.
Yep.
Who are BoxyCharm's target market avatars?
You know what? I don't really have one. I know that it's a thing. In the corporate world, everyone is asking that question, who is she? And I've asked myself the same question, the who is she? And I can tell you that I don't have one. If she's into makeup or beauty products, she's in it. Okay, she can be Middle America, she can be the Hispanic, she can be the glam girl that goes out and she wants to be seen through the skies with her very shiny highlighter. She can be the one that's skincare enthusiast. I don't really care. I literally, that's why I segmentize my boxes. That's why we have an algorithm to actually give you what works for you. When you ask yourself, but at the same time, I'm asking myself more, what is the experience when you shop BoxyCharm? If you look at stores, department stores and so on, what would be equate to when you think about the BoxyCharm? And I'll say, well, we have all the mega brands, but we also have all the new brands that are coming out that can be extremely popular. So when you come over to BoxyCharm, it's an understanding that you're gonna find the diamonds under the rug that you haven't heard of, but you're also gonna see the mainstream big brands that you always wanted to try those products, but they're just out there and you didn't have a chance. So I'm always seeing this as an amusement park, giving candies to children and having the best rides out there, and that's gonna be their experience. And it's very colorful with lots of colors, and it's chic, and all the cool people are there. And it's always busy, and you want to be there because that's all the action is at. So the brands wants to be there, the influencers want to talk about it, and the members wants to be there because that's where you get all the cool stuff. And that's how I see it, instead of seeing of the who is she. And everyone has their favorite ride. Everyone has their favorite candy.
When you join BoxyCharm, do you go through a system of questions so you can start building up that profile or whatever you want to call it to help? Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yeah. Great idea. What about the how much time and effort did you put into building that customer experience?
Well, years.
Yeah.
It's been years in the making. The first few years, we didn't even have that. And I didn't want to have a questionnaire because I knew we're not going to be using that. The reason was I needed to build critical mass on my purchasing side. So I figure until I have a couple hundred thousand members, I won't be able to drop the cost enough so I can get the best deal. So I don't want to go and put a questionnaire over there if I'm not here to actually segmentize everything. It wouldn't be honest. And we ended up in 2018 doing so, adding a questionnaire, educating our members, now give us your questionnaire. So we had that. We also have the reviews. Once you receive a product, you let us know what you think about the brand, about the product, about the category. So that kind of enriched the data. And then we have another way that we do something else before we buy the product. So it's a multiple of about 3 to 4 different elements that help us enrich the data and personalize each member, knowing what to give them, who to give what and when.
What's your favorite social media platform right now?
Ooh, on a personal level, Clubhouse. On the other one, I would say still, I'm kind of like a battle between Facebook and Instagram. And you can tell me Facebook, I'll tell you yes. Facebook is a very strong platform. And I think if you know Clubhouse, you'll know that on Facebook, the most underrated feature is groups and forums. And they're extremely solid. I love Facebook for that reason. It is a very powerful platform. And the member age group over there has much more desire to go there and look for something that they can buy. So they're much more assertive for what's out there.
Within the group. So you don't have a
set. Within the group as a member per whole. But then once you actually group them together, it is a very powerful combination.
Very good. Kels, next question.
Okay. I also want to add, just a second. I just want to add that we have another giveaway today as well. We are getting sponsored by Brit Treats from Alan. So if you are US, if you are in the US, you can comment hashtag Brit Treats and you can win one of these delicious British chocolates that I can highly recommend. But yeah, so hashtag Brit Treats, US only for chocolates. And if you want to take two people and use the hashtag BoxyCharm, you'll be entered into the BoxyCharm giveaway too.
Okay, very
so
good.
Next question. We have a couple coming in. So do you need to date the INF before asking for a collaborative? Like, share, comment before asking?
I'm not sure I understand the question. What is INF?
I'm not sure either. I'm not sure who the Facebook user is, but could we...
Brian.
Oh, Brian. Okay. Yeah, Brian, can you just give us some more insight on that?
Okay. So when we're waiting for that, this is from Dr. Kaz. Hey, Yosef, what do you see are the best top funnels these days? YouTube, Google, et cetera. Any advice at a high level?
Well, they're different. So... think of it this way, right? And color cosmetics for beauty. Okay, I can speak for that. Instagram can be very powerful if you have payoff with your product. If it's an eyeshadow product, a highlighter, you can do a short video where you can swatch the product and you can see the payoff right away. The resolution is good. Even the low res on stories is good enough to sell the product where you can see the payoff for the makeup enthusiast, right? If you're looking at skincare, YouTube is more your jam because on YouTube you will have a different experience with the influencer where they're going to be mentioning, they'll be talking about themselves. You can relate to them a little bit more. So if someone said, well, you know, I always tell you how I break out, I started to use this particular product and so on. So it really depends. I think you have to understand that this is not a one channel show. You have to go across. You have to do Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Now TikTok as well. In some cases, it's very hard to grow or get revenues on TikTok until you find a way. But the ones that you will see a better, I would say, experience for people coming and shopping, I would say definitely Facebook. Right next to it is YouTube. And then below that, Instagram. And much lower than that is TikTok. That's just the way I would see it. In terms of the users, interest in buying anything like
that. Oh, very interesting. Okay. Kels.
Okay, our next question from Rad. What other consumer products apart from makeup will work with the subscription model? So I guess any recommendations?
I mean, there are plenty and you can actually check it online. There are tons of subscription boxes. I will tell anyone that goes into a subscription, say don't do it. Look, it's extremely complex. There aren't too many that grow to our size, right? There's just literally a handful of us in the last 10 years between us, Boxy, Ipsy, Stitch Fix. There's only a few of us, right? And the reason, it's a complex business as you grow and you scale. The channel in the future, once you actually get into a scale, it gets complicated because you have to have manufacturers laid out for months in advance. And it's a very difficult, and you have to prepare everything in advance. And imagine when you have to ship a million boxes, you have about a few days, you have to wrap everything and ship everything. There aren't too many places that can actually perform that. Not too many companies globally would be able to actually perform what you want to do. So, but let's talk about subscription. You have two types, okay? You have in the way I see it, okay, when you have a subscription box, you have replenishment and discovery. Replenishment, think of your Dollar Shave Club, okay, your, I don't know, some kind of medication that you need. It's a replenishment, right? You might want to use hygiene, there are subscriptions for that, right? So it's a replenishment, they get it and so on. But no one's going to snap a picture of that. Here are my tampons I received for this month. No one usually would do it because they know what they're about to receive. Here are my razors I received from this. No, nobody needs to talk about this because they know what to expect. On the discovery side, it's more drawn where members are going to take a picture. Members are going to talk about that, especially when there is a revenue value behind this, right? If there is a value added, if you say, well, if that's my own brand and I sell you my own stuff, you might not open the box every time because there's no true value. It's their own brand. They can't go and claim that it's three times the value. It is what it is. But if I'll give you products that are already out there in the market and they sell, one item sell more than double the entire box plus four more items, the value is over $150 in some cases, and I only pay $25, and it's a surprise. They'll take pictures, they'll talk about this, they'll scream to the sky. And what happened is the net promoter score changes. Now everyone is promoting you. It's a different. So I went into that route, not because I knew what I was getting into. I got lucky and later on I learned the space. So if you go to the other side, you have to make sure that it really helps. If you go to the other side, is going to be the replenishment part. It has to make sense. It has to be cheaper than the Amazon store. It has to be awesome experience. You give it to them just on time and all that stuff, which that can work too, but that's just not my, that's a whole separate business in which I am less experienced with. So that's kind of like a tip for you guys when it comes down to what to do and how to think about subscription.
All right. What's the next question?
Okay. Following up on Brian's question, INF is influencer. Do you just ask them to collaborate? Or do we need to like their page, like post, do comments over a short period of time, then ask to collaborate, date the influencer before asking for a marriage? Hope that helps.
I don't really do it this way. I mean, I would tell you that we're trying to simplify everything we're doing. We contact the influencers. We don't ask them to engage on our post first. It might work, be actually a pretty creative idea, but we haven't done this. In our case, many of the influencers either follow us as it is, commenting, but not all of them. We're just trying to remove the friction and simplify the process. But I'm not saying that's not a bad idea. It's actually a pretty good idea to kind of like warm up everybody into it and ensure that it's more authentic. I would usually go, if I actually work with celebrities or with other influencers, we usually go, we meet, we take stories together so people can tell, okay, look, they know each other anyway on a personal level, so it makes sense that they work together. But it's only a handful of them that I can only do it on a personal level. So,
okay. What about who owns the images?
The images that the influencers do stay within them. At most, we're going to repost and give them the credit. But it really comes down to who they are. In some cases, some influencers allow us access as to use their page when we do paid. So there are different agreements with everyone.
Okay. Now, one thing, Kels, just want to straighten something up here. I think when Alan did the hashtag Brit chocolates, he was talking about when I held up the mug with the chocolates in it. So everybody can, even though you've got hashtag Brit chocolates, it's all for North America or Canada or US. So we'll just use BoxyCharm, put everybody in. The first draw will be the BoxyCharm product, and then we'll do the chocolates. So just to keep it all simple, like you just said, keeping things simple. Okay. All right. Any other questions?
From Simon, at what stage do you step away from your doing day-to-day tasks? I feel it keeps me connected to the team and keeps me grounded if I'm occasionally on the front line.
I'm sorry, so what stage do you step away? Oh, okay, that's a great question. that's a tough one. Mm. Well, I think every company faced that, right? We grew fairly fast from zero to 400 million in change in revenue the biggest challenge I had was, and I guess the best way to put it is moving from flat organization or tiering your organization, right? It was hard at first because I would be involved in many of the execution parts and I ran out of battery eventually. And it was tough because it was hard to find a person that knows the technicalities and so on and can manage everyone and has the maturity to do so. So we ran through people. Eventually, I ended up hiring my first, well, not my first, we hired a COO in 2017, the end of 2017, that came from the e-com space. And the reason and the way I've done this, and I'll explain what happened. The question is around how, when do you let go, right? You let go when you have the right people that you can hand over the torch to them, knowing that they'll do the job. The problem is you have to train some people. You have to actually coach some people. You have to have the time to actually interview people and do so many parts in the hiring part that you have no time to do it. And you run into a predicament where you can't do it. So the solution was hire from the top. Hire from the top, that one person that he can manage all the hiring underneath it. He can reorg the organization and give it a short, mid, and long-term vision of how the org chart is going to look like. And it's someone that have done this, that have been in a small startup and have scaled with the startup to a large size. So they have been through that road before. You don't want them to be a theoretical. You want them to have the experience. You want them to have done this. And e-com people. Now, I understand subscription is different, but I couldn't expect someone to be there in the subscription. It was impossible. But e-com is the next sister right next to subscription. It would be very powerful. So that's what we did, and it was working.
Okay. Yeah, that question always pops up where, especially for you, you've got a hyper-growth company. How do you cross the chasm? I mean, great book, but you know, how do you handle going from nothing to 400 million in such a short period of time? There's a learning curve. Like, not everybody can just step in and be a CEO at that level. You know, did you have to question, or have you ever questioned, wow, I need somebody to step in as a CEO and I step back?
I had asked myself in the early stage, actually, when I was around 10 million in sales. And but as I kept thinking about this, I was very clear that there aren't too many companies that have done this at that scale. There's perhaps two. And only one of them knows how to do it, and he's my competitor, which later on acquired MoxiCharm, and we roll over a piece, and now he's my partner. And obviously, it's on me. So I better figure it out, because there's no one else out there in my space. Okay, maybe in other spaces it's different. But what I would say is that in my case, you can pick it up from business school. It's not something that you're going to go and come from the university ready to do so. You have to get down and dirty and figure it out from there. And some are made for that, some are not. Right? It really is the way it is. I'm glad that I had all that experience, because by the end of the day, you go through all these challenges and you enjoy what you're doing. You like to build things, and you look back and you said, I've evolved through the process. I'm not the same person I was when I started the business, and I'm not going to be the same person in the next 7 years to keep running this business. It's not going to be the same, but you need to evolve, and that evolution part is priceless. And I would recommend everyone to at least try and give themselves a chance, unless they find that, you know what, it's not what I want to do, and then bring someone else. But give yourself that chance to actually scale with the business and figure it out.
What was your biggest mistake?
Well, I would say I had many. By the way, I had tons of mistakes. And if I had to sum it up, it would always come down to having the wrong people and keeping them too long. A person that was there, I knew it was wrong. I knew it's not right for the organization. Great people, but doesn't always work. And prolonging what's imminent and not learning from the previous mistake, because you keep doing that emotional decision of trying to keep versus just let it go and move on. So that would be probably something that I would say. Yeah, that would be that.
Fantastic. Kels, we'll take one more question.
Yeah, I'm just going to say we got...
And by the way, Joe, you're getting tons of fans here.
Okay, let me see.
And then we'll go to the Wheel of Kelsey.
Okay, so this is from Faye. So how do you get influencers to allow you to post it on Amazon or Instagram without paying high, massive fees?
I don't post anything on Amazon, obviously. Yeah. Look, like I said, it's in many cases, it's relationship. I have a great team. I want you to understand, I do not manage influencers myself for a while. I do have relationship with some of them that I'm friends with, but I do have a very small team, actually, and very effective, very efficient, amazing group of three that run a couple of thousands of influencers, right? And you know what? I think that, put the relationship aside, if your brand is cool, you're going to have more input of influencers in which you're going to be able to be more selective who do you want to work with for what price. That's the bottom line. Right. You just need to work on your cool factor all the time and be cool, makes them relevant, and eventually you're going to get free mentions just because you're going to be part of the conversation, part of everything. That should be your focus. Make sure that your conversation within them, so because you are part of that. If I'll talk about iPhone or Mercedes-Benz or so on, it is already so big and cool, whatever it is, and people are going to talk about that. Influencers are not necessarily going to go and contact them and say, I just mentioned you, I want my cat. No one is doing that, right? You have to try, aspire yourself to be there. So you're going to be part of their conversation. That would be my suggestion.
And Faye, one thing I can mention about the Amazon side of things, one way that you can do this with people buying your product, so they get your product. We did this with our knives, where people would get them, they'd get the insert, and right in the insert, it would say, you know, there might be a contest or there might be something going on, or it could just be, hey, tag us using our product. And they go ahead, they tag you, you get the notification, you use an app like Repost, you download the person's image, and you can post it into Amazon Posts, and it goes back and it's giving them a recognition for it. So it's a really simple process. That's just one simple way that you can get people using your product, you know, just by tagging you from the insert card. Okay, so I think, unless there's some other stuff that just came through, but I know we've got a cutoff at 1 o'clock. Is there anything there, Kels, or should we just get to the wheel?
Let's see. This is just for Joe. Did Joe mention what he's doing now? He merged with his competitor. What's the next best tech digital opportunity? There you go.
Well, look, this is just the beginning for us. I mean, we both understand the potential. I think the biggest self-actualization is seeing brands growing with your company. And we're only in 5% of the world population. We're only in the US and Canada. We have the rest of the world to go and influence. And there are many more things that are coming in. So doing this together is exciting. I will say that the way I saw it, we're the two largest beauty subscription boxes in the world. Both of us. And the way I always saw it was two civilizations that had their own methodology of what they're doing, right? One was the Egyptians building pyramids, and then the other one was the Mayans building pyramids in Mexico, right? Everyone had their own methodology. No one ever knew how the other one does that. Now we're just combining them together, and it's a beautiful thing. So now we can start building bridges, we can build everything else.
That's cool.
Okay, great.
All right, so let's get over to the wheel.
Okay.
Alan says, good luck to everybody.
Yeah. Sponsored by Brit Treats. Fantastic chocolates, as always. All right. So the first one we'll do for the BoxyCharm giveaway. So here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, Brian.
Okay, congratulations, Brian. And number two. This is for the chocolate.
All right. Olga.
Okay.
I think Olga just won the other day, too. She's lucky. Olga, go out and get a lottery ticket. All right. So I think that's about it for the end of the show. Joe. Thank you. I know you're a busy guy and really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hey, no problem. All right, everybody. So that's it for today's show. Thanks for joining us today. We got a special episode tomorrow with Tim Jordan. He's going to be coming on talking a little bit about mentoring. And then on Friday, my buddy Kevin King, hopefully he's out of the cold in Texas. But I think that's it for today. And once again, I wanted to thank Joe for coming on and giving us that giveaway. And Alan, you're awesome for providing us these other sponsored giveaway today. So, Kels, what do we have to do?
Let me just see. There was one question from Gideon. I'm not sure if you can answer it, but what's that? I think we get this question a lot. I think it's a pretty important question. If someone uploads a picture of your product to social media and tags you, is it okay to repost it without asking them?
I would probably reach out and ask them, just probably. A lot of the times when we're doing it, like with the influencers, we'll actually have them sign something that we can, if we're allowed to. We do something a little bit different than what Joe is doing. We're trying to build up Amazon brand ambassadors. So from influencer to brand ambassador is one extra step. They sign an agreement with you that you're allowed to use their product. I think as long as you, and again, I'm not a lawyer. This is a big disclaimer, but as long as you acknowledge them, then I think it's okay.
Yeah, I know it's pretty common practice on like Instagram to put the person's handle in the caption and then use it like a program like a repost.
And that's what repost will do. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It'll make the little handle. And so it gives a credit and then you can tag the person too. But yeah, I would always double check before you post anyone, like just get their consent first.
But yeah, okay. That's it. We're done. Kelsey.
We are. So yes, tune in tomorrow. We have the bonus episode. It's going to be great. It's going to be kind of like a roundtable panel about mentorship. So tune in for that. It's, I think, going to be a great episode. And as always, head over to our Facebook group, Lunch with Norm, Amazon FBA and E-commerce Collective. And if you just are missing the tail end of this episode, you can go over to our YouTube channel, Norman Farrar, and that's where all the highlights, everything is. Yes, and smash those like buttons, ring the bell, subscribe to us on YouTube, anywhere, Instagram too. Norm has a great Instagram channel that there's a lot of tips and advice too there. So yeah, and like this before you go, get those likes up there.
All right, Kelsey. All right, thank you, Kelsey. All right, everybody, join us every Monday, Wednesday, tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday, noon Eastern Standard Time. And thank you for watching. Thank you for being part of the community. It's awesome having you as part of this whole thing that's starting to grow. Anyways, thank you. Kelsey, hit the music. Lunch with Norm.